This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 202. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Our C2E2 wrap-up, Buffy Goes Suburban, Why Not to Skip the Snow Queen in Your Guest List, When Xanadu Met Etrigan, Rot 2, Hero Zero, A Rush Job on Clark, and Wave Goodbye to the Tinker. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Monday, April 16, 2012. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts, and blogs. And you can subscribe via iTunes where you can leave us a review.
And you can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. Well, first off, sorry for the late episode, but we were at C2E2 in Chicago this weekend.
Woo-hoo!
And it just didn't get back in time to tape on Sunday.
So, and then I also had to read comics.
There was that.
Because I am two New Comic Wednesdays behind.
Yes. And because of C2E2 and because of Free Comic Book Day coming up on May 5th, we're having a big party, but you get the presents in our big contest. Announcer bot, tell them what you could win.
A Wolverine bobblehead figure. A Night Owl Classic Watchman figure. A Silver Age Perry White figure. A 24 TV series trading card set. Variant covers. And the Green Arrow Quiver by Kevin Smith hardcover. Pictures of all the prizes will be on the website. Back to you, Mark.
So how can you win? Well, you can share or like the Facebook link for this week's episode, or you can retweet the tweet for this week's episode, or you can comment on this week's episode at sfpodcastnetwork.com. You can do all three and triple your chances to win.
And this week's winner is Billy Hogan. He won last week's prizes, which were the Wolverine bobblehead doll and the Night Owl Classic Watchman figure. This week's prize will be a Silver Age Perry White action figure. And our prizes are thanks to our good friends at our local comic shop, Pack Rat Comics.
I've been collecting comics for over 20 years, and no one matches the quality and value of Pack Rat Comics in Hilliard, Ohio. Jamie and Teresa have your favorite comics in stock, along with action figures and all kinds of comic collectibles, along with a huge lower level filled with long boxes of older titles at great prices. Pack Rat is well organized, clean, and welcoming to new customers. They also hold regular events, including a mini convention for the upcoming Free Comic Book Day. Special guests this year include Ernie Hudson from the Ghostbusters franchise and Noel Fisher from Twilight, along with over a dozen artists. So check them out on the web at packratcomics.com, facebook.com/packratcomics, or call 614-527-8450, or just drop by. They're on Latimer Street in Hilliard, Ohio, open 7 days a week. I trust Pack Rat for my weekly comic book order, and so should you. Back to you, Mindy.
So if you want to win this week's prize, remember, like or share the Facebook link for this week's episode, retweet the tweet for this week's episode, or comment on this week's episode at sfpodcastnetwork.com. Do all three and triple your chances to win, like Billy Hogan did this week.
Congratulations. So, before we get into the comics for the last 2 weeks, we wanted to talk again about C2E2. So, this is a big comic book and entertainment show in Chicago. We went the first year. We weren't able to go last year, so this is actually the third year of the event. And this is considered kind of the bellwether as to whether a show is going to make it or not. And by the third year, either you've created enough traction and getting enough traffic to make it a going concern or not. I thought it was well organized, as it was last year. The producer of this show really only concentrates on a few shows, unlike Wizard World, which has way too many shows, and I think they're much less organized as a result.
other shows, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There were some potential, again, concerns over the attendance. There are no numbers, at least as of this taping. But we were there on Friday and Saturday. Friday seemed pretty brisk, and Saturday was fairly packed. I mean, it was hard to get around the dealer room floor by Saturday afternoon.
And there were lines at the panels, and a lot of the panels were pretty full.
Right. And so you mentioned the panels. Some of the guests, John Barrowman from Torchwood, Val Kilmer, John Cusack, who has a Pit and the Pendulum movie coming out, I think.
It's The Raven.
Or The Raven.
Yes.
Well, the only reason I know that because I happened to see a commercial on Sunday about it. There certainly wasn't any publicity for it other than him being there.
Right. It didn't say from The Raven.
Yeah.
And they didn't have a booth or anything for it.
You had Anthony Daniels, C-3PO. You had Nicholas Brendan from Buffy. You had Sean Astin from Lord of the Rings. And you had about 400-plus artists. It was a huge artist alley. There was a very large dealer room, and it had some actual comic dealers, which you don't see at all the conventions anymore. There were several, I would say at least a dozen, comic book dealers, and the long boxes were there, and people picking through stuff.
I wonder if that's because there's so many local comic shops in Chicago. You saw that there were a lot of comic dealers from Chicago that were there.
Yeah, most of them were locals. You didn't see too much outside of the Chicago area, but that was plenty.
For comic dealers.
Right. Plus, you had the usual suspects you see at these conventions anymore. You had the guy selling the Dungeons and Dragons dice. You had the obligatory corset dealer. It had steampunk-type clothes, and you were selling that. There were geek T-shirts. There was one that I had not seen before, and I'm curious if we're going to see them at other conventions because it's got to be very expensive to do this. This company...
Geek Chic.
They're at geekchichq.com. These people sell gamer furniture, is the only way really to describe it. Coffee tables and dining room tables and chairs, and they're all designed for gaming in that the top comes off. They have this well inside it with an acrylic surface, and you can set up your D&D stuff or your role-playing stuff or just board games.
Really, any of your gaming stuff can go under this acrylic surface, and then you can use dry erase markers on it to actually run your game.
Right.
This is very neat.
Yeah, and then they have a groove that goes around the top. You can kind of hang stuff off of, so you can have, like, cup holders. It's actually pretty cool. And they have drawers under it to hold things. And they also have desks or organizers for gamers. They also had this set of drawers designed for holding comic books or collectibles, that type of thing.
This would be a really high-end long box.
Yes, a very high-end long box. This company isn't cheap, but it is clearly really well-made hardwood materials.
Very quality, heirloom
yes,
quality furniture.
Absolutely. So if you happen to be on the lookout for that, you may want to check out this company. But we were very impressed with it. I don't think we can necessarily afford it, but...
Well, I don't know. I don't think we have anywhere to put it.
Right.
We'd have to buy all the other new furniture to go with it.
Right. Now, this year they had free shuttles from the hotels, which they didn't have the first year, and they almost need those because, for whatever reason, Chicago's decided they don't want to make it easy for you to get to the convention center.
Well, they want to collect the parking fee.
Apparently. There is a way to get down there via one of the trains, one of the Metra trains, but where they drop you off it's like, this is a stop?
Yeah. And then again, there's also, I think, a bus that runs sort of near there that you can walk a couple blocks to get to the convention center.
Right. But it was nice to see the free shuttles.
My question is, why even have it at McCormick Place? Why not go to Rosemont or even further out to Schaumburg?
Yeah, it's got to be more expensive, I would think, to do McCormick. Maybe I'm wrong, but that seems to be... It's certainly overkill because... They only took up one of the four major halls there.
Right.
And there wasn't really another show going on.
Well, I just think it would be so much easier if you didn't have to pay $20 for parking, if you could stay at a hotel nearby that wasn't $200 a night.
Right.
You know?
Right. That would certainly be more convenient. And I think, frankly, you might get more people to come to an event if it was out in the suburbs. Maybe I'm wrong. We had a question about what was the DJ about? It was out in the main hall as you walked in.
Well, like sort of in the foyer of the
right.
show.
Right. And there was a DJ playing just, you know, music, you know.
Well, just because we found it annoying doesn't mean that young people wouldn't.
But it's not like there isn't enough noise already at a convention.
Exactly.
You don't really need to add to it. There were, of course, you see the cosplayers, and we actually posted some pics to the Facebook site just this morning, so they're up there. You can take a look at them.
We didn't take nearly as many pictures as we did the first year.
Right.
When we had the nieces with us.
Right.
Then it was like they were at Disney World and taking pictures of the characters.
All right. So a couple pieces of show news came out. First off, there's a new DC Digital series, or actually two series, that'll come out first in digital and then later as traditional paper.
Well, they said the Amicommies, I'm sorry to jump the gun,
yeah,
weren't going to be paper. There weren't plans for it right
well,
now.
Well, we'll see. I bet you they make that call. Well, as you mentioned, Amicommie Girls, which is based on a series of statues that DC direct sells. Then there's a second series that's going to be Batman, and it will be new stories not tied to the New 52, and kind of like Legends of the Dark Knight, kind of like that. Mark Waid is putting out a new series of digital comics from ThrillBent.com, apparently stuff he's going to write himself, at least for now. I mentioned DC Direct. It's now called DC Collectibles because they wanted to make it clear as to what they do. And there's going to be a larger online component now for DC Direct, and maybe some exclusive figures will come out just on the website.
Did they call it DC Direct because that was the action figures that came direct from DC?
Yes.
And then the other ones were licensed?
Yeah, exactly.
That makes more sense now that I think about it.
But right.
DC Collectibles probably is a good move.
Right, because, again, it describes what it is. Dark Horse announced some Buffy tie-ins. There's going to be a new, apparently ongoing Willow series starting in November and a Spike 5-issue miniseries in August. And near the end of the summer, there will be, for a 3-month period, a weekly Buffy book. Now, I assume that means Buffy and Angel and the Spike one, so that there'll be some sort of Buffy book out every week for 3 months.
Right.
Overall, I thought it was a decent show. I certainly believe they got plenty of traffic. Any other thoughts on the show?
Oh, I had fun.
Mm-hmm.
I did get to see a couple artists that I really like in Artist Alley. So a shout out for Love and Capes and for Dirk Manning, who does a couple really interesting books.
And we're going to see Dirk Manning at Free Comic Book Day.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so now we've got 2 weeks of comics to cover, so let's get started with Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 9 from Dark Horse by Chambliss, Alley, and Richards. So Buffybot and Spike go to see Andrew. And, of course, Andrew's the one that created the Buffybots in the first place. And she's just like, what did you do with my body? Well, he apparently roofied her at the party we saw early in this season. He transferred her memories into Buffybot and then sent the real Buffy to hide out in suburbia.
So all these symptoms she was having of pregnancy were just a result of glitches in the Buffybot.
Yes.
I like that explanation.
Now, unfortunately, the real Buffy is abducted at the end of the issue from suburbia by a character I didn't recognize.
I'm thinking that is one of the Slayer girls who's mad at Buffy.
That could well be. That would make sense. Ferris number 2 from Vertigo by Willingham and Jimenez. Now, a question I had is, did the pages seem out of order to you? It did to me. Where we kept going back to the Snow Queen, and at one point it seems like they're in the middle of a battle with Snow Queen, and then they're not, and then they are again.
I can sort of see how you might think that. I thought it was just like little flashbacks.
Well, yeah, but it just seemed unclear to me. It just I looked online. There was no reference to it. So it must have just been how he wanted to do the story.
Yes, I think that's the case.
So Sleeping Beauty and Alibaba are on the run from Snow Queen. And we find out what her beef is against Sleeping Beauty. Because the imp tells the tale where the Snow Queen wasn't invited to Sleeping Beauty's christening.
Now, see, I didn't get the feeling that that was the Snow Queen.
You don't think that's Snow Queen?
I mean, the one that wasn't invited?
Yeah.
They said it was Hadeon the Destroyer.
Oh, I assume that was Snow Queen.
No, see, and I thought then at the end where she says she wants to hear more, that then it was going to be more like a Scheherazade kind of thing.
Oh, that's possible.
Where they're telling stories to keep from being killed.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the deal is on that. Demon Knights number 8 by Cornell, Chang, and Neves. So we finally learn how Xanadu and Etrigan get together. So Jason Blood was Merlin's aide, you know, just like a serf. And she was Merlin's apprentice. So they fall in love. And of course, as we know, at the end of Camelot, the fall of Camelot, Blood is bonded to Etrigan, Jason Blood. And so Xanadu goes out into the world. At one point, she's captured as a witch and she's going to be burned. Jason Blood appears. He turns into Etrigan and saves her. She rebuffs Etrigan's advances at first, but he turns around and makes sure that she can't marry Jason Blood. Basically slaughters everyone at what was going to be the wedding ceremony.
Right.
And so the only way that she and Jason Blood can be together is to lead Etrigan on. Or is all of this just a story and she's actually leading Blood on?
Right.
Depends who you want to trust. Do you want to trust her or do you want to trust Etrigan?
Well, see, and the thing I found more interesting about this story is when they were comparing notes on their various Camelots.
Right.
And like Shining Knight says, well, I was in Camelot and I don't remember you. You know, so we find out there's
multiple Camelots over the course of time.
Right.
Over maybe, and remember, several issues ago, they made a reference to that Camelot was around like 2,000 years earlier, which at the time we're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. And now it does, because there were apparently multiple Camelots.
And in fact, there might be a Camelot right now.
Exactly. Animal Man and Swamp Thing, number 8. Just kind of lumping these two together, by Lemire, Pugh, and Foreman, or by Snyder and Paquette. So Maxine confronts the rot and is promptly torn apart, but she just regenerates.
That was really creepy.
Yes. She just took a fox and just kind of...
Well, and the fox let her.
Right.
You know, so right. It wasn't like she took the fox.
Right. And she just regenerated back into Maxine. Buddy then goes off to confront the rot, who also take him out pretty quickly. And we don't know. He may have been taken over. It looks like he was taken over by the rot at the end of the issue.
I have to say, yeah, he might have been taken over by the rot. But I have to agree with what someone in one of the panels at C2E2 said.
Right.
This is a great story, but if it's set in the DC universe, if all these people are getting killed, why aren't there other superheroes involved?
So meanwhile, over in Swamp Thing, there's more attacks on humans by the rot, and Alec is confronting the rot as well. He refuses to believe that he's really not Alec anymore. And he does pretty well against the rot for a while. He's fighting to save Abby, who we already know has been converted into this huge creature.
Queen.
And Abby impales him in the end. And so not going nearly as well for him as he had hoped. I am looking forward to seeing these two books actually come together. Obviously, they're going on a parallel path, but I'd like to see them actually come together.
Do you think they'll just be together for a couple issues?
Right.
And then they'll start having divergent storylines again?
I assume.
I don't know that by starting off with this huge, you know, we have to defeat the rot storyline, where can they go from here?
Right. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see the next direction. They said at C2E2 that they're going to go into talking about Anton Arcane.
Right.
But to me, that's a much more personal story than this huge epic they're telling to start off.
Yes. I'll keep reading it because I like it.
Yeah. Action number 8 by Morrison, Morales, Walker, McLeod, and Bryant. So this is the final battle with Brainiac. He uses a now tiny rocket ship to take out Brainiac. He restores Metropolis to full size, blah, 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 blah. I wasn't very impressed with the storyline here. One reason I wanted to bring up this issue, there was some terrible artwork in this issue. And clearly the last few pages, especially, were like these fill-in artists. It was just terrible. There's all these shots of people, especially Superman, with these dark shadows all over his face. It just looked amateurish to me. Most of the issue is okay in terms of the artwork, but I guess the question is, do you want titles to come out on time, or are you willing to wait in order to make sure the good artist gets to do all the artwork?
Well, and maybe not overwork the guys. You want to do the work.
Yeah. Unwritten number 36 from Vertigo by Carey and Gross. So we go back to some characters we've met previously. The Tinker is following this never-ending set of stairs downward, and that's where he saw him leave previously. He just went into this set of stairs into the earth, and he's still going down these stairs. He finally falls through them because the stairs are just falling apart, and he finds himself in a desert. And we see this huge exodus of quasi-familiar characters. They kind of tried to stay away from copyrighted stuff, but clearly it's like, okay, well, we know who that is, and we know who that is.
Right.
And they're all trying to escape the wave, which is going to wipe everything out, apparently. And as this exodus leaves and goes on, they leave behind a top hat, and the Tinker picks it up, and it contains Polly the Rabbit, who we saw probably over a year ago in a special issue. So they decide to go on together, and they come upon this huge castle that contains Polly's descendants, who are these huge warrior rabbits.
That was good.
They refuse entry to the castle because they're like, we have to batten the hatches because the wave is coming. So Tinker looks through his bag to find the right sword, and he has this kind of bag of holding.
There's a sword that they say he can get into the castle.
Yeah, yeah. If you had this. And so he starts pulling out basically all the famous swords out of this bag.
So it's pretty much a bag of holding.
Yeah. And, oh, no, Narsil, no, I don't need that one.
There's Excalibur.
There you go. Suddenly the wave is upon them, and there's dozens of rather familiar houses that fly by. The text that goes along with that's pretty funny because they're talking about the House of Secrets and the House of Mystery and the House of... It goes on and on and on.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a nice two-page shot. And as this wave of houses fly by, suddenly Polly's turned back into a man because he was enchanted into being a rabbit in the first place. And he decides to just deck Tinker. It's like, okay, I'm going on my own. Now I have these swords. I don't need you.
Well, Tinker wants to keep looking for his lost love.
Yeah.
But Polly wants to try to get back to the real world.
Yes.
So Polly decides he needs that bag.
And so he hits him. Tinker falls because he's an old man, keep in mind. And his head hits a rock. And so he's very badly hurt. And Polly decides, well, I got to save the guy. But now the actual wave is upon them. And it's this wave of just whiteness and blankness. And that's how the issue ends.
So do you think the wave was like the results of the whole thing that happened in the last issue?
Yes.
And like,
yes,
literature being wiped out?
That it's wiping out literature. Yeah, exactly. All right. Before we get out of here, it's time to play America's fastest growing new game show.
Guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly?
Yeah.
Are you ready, Mark?
Yep.
Okay, go.
TV related?
No.
Movie related?
No.
Book related?
No.
Music related?
Yes.
Oh no, it's a music issue. Ugh. Music issue.
In fact, it's a special music issue.
Oh boy. Is it related to some award?
No.
Is it related to a specific genre?
No.
Is it a specific artist?
Yes. Well, the person on the cover is.
Okay. Person on the cover. So is the person on the cover best known for pop music?
Yes.
This is going to be hard. Is it a woman?
Yes.
Is it a woman under 20?
She's probably fairly close.
Okay.
I'll look her up real quick.
Shoot. Well, the hair color is no use doing that because they keep changing. Is she one of the ex-Disney kids?
I don't think so.
Okay. Oh, man. I'm never good at this. So I assume this person has an album coming out? That's why she's on the cover?
I assume so.
She didn't win an award? So this isn't some retrospective of somebody who's just 20?
That's correct.
Related to any of the reality shows?
No.
Okay, shoot. Not sure what else to ask.
Do you know any young female artists?
I can just start naming.
Well, that would probably be better than what you're doing now.
Britney Spears. Oh. I don't know.
Oh, she's not young.
I don't know.
You're out of time. It was Adele.
Oh, of course.
Even I have heard of Adele.
I've heard of her, but I wouldn't have, you know.
Okay, Mr. Frank Sinatra fan.
That's right. Good music ended around 1963. So.
That's before you were born.
Exactly, unfortunately. So, want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including my blog about Hogan's Heroes and Star Trek The Next Generation. You can subscribe via iTunes and please leave us a review and please enter the big contest.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn. Follow us on Twitter at SFPPN or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.